you'd think they'd know the importance of a good helmet.
Webway has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host of the Alabama Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined by Red Powell.
Hello.
The Sass is back, and Adam Camilleri.
Yo, hey.
Welcome, welcome everyone. We're going to be talking about the Legs of Votann. I've got a little hand motion that I do when I say
the Did you say the Legs of Votann or the Legs? Because their legs aren't that. There's not much to talk about the Legs of Votann.
They've got a special rule for that.
To make it go faster, they grow more legs. The special rule is called second knee. And they
I feel like Legs of Votann is just such a mouthful. Like, do you just call them Votann, or do you call them Love, or the Leagues, or what?
I do like calling them Love. I think that's what they're here to spread. Definitely what they're here to spread, right?
For sure.
It's not often we get a brand new faction, and yeah, especially brand new models, whole new range.
Well, what was the last one? Was the last one GSC? And the one before that was AdMech?
Yeah, I think that's the order they came out, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're both
sisters. Count, right?
They've had a Sisters of Battle Codex before, right?
I would say Gene Stealers technically had something before, too.
That's true. Yeah, it's fair enough. Maybe AdMech was the last one then. But regardless, both of those were 7th edition. So if you did make a case of one of them, Sisters was, what, 8th edition? They got the new range?
Yeah, Sisters was 8th, yeah.
Yeah, so the last possible one is an easy, like, 3 years ago.
Luckily enough to have a box of these in hand, I've actually built the bikes, the Carl, not Carl, Carl.
The Carl?
No, Carl. No,
you had it right.
we're now stuck with Carl.
Yeah,
and the Iron Hair Champion, That's the I've completed that already. You can actually find some pictures. I'll post them up on Twitter at warmaster_tpm. Looks so cool.
Is that the guy with the two fists?
No, he doesn't have two fists.
Sprinting at you?
He is sprinting at you. So I've given him the axe, and I'll tell you why when we get there. And he's got his basically bolter and shield. He's pretty tough. You can give him a hammer, mass hammer, but the Dark Star Axe has kind of a cool profile. Well, look, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but there's some neat stuff in this book and some combos that are kind of easy to achieve.
Well, there's not many models in the range as of yet. Yeah, not even every model is getting released at the same time, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, we don't know what's going up. So by the time of recording, we don't know fully what's going to go over pre-order outside of the Army Box. The Army Box comes with 20 Hearthcrane Warriors, a unit of the Pioneers, the Bikes, and one basically High King. You can turn him into the special character or make him a generic character, and then the champion that we were talking about.
By generic character, are we talking about Carl?
Yes.
Yeah, Carl.
It's either special Carl or normal Carl.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it. Uthar the Destined, who will definitely
Carl,
be talking about.
Carl with
about.
Destiny or just regular Carl? Man, there are a lot of options for that. So it's only one troops option, yeah, which is the Hearthkin Warriors. But man, they come in a lot of different flavors.
Yeah, they do. And I think that's going to be one of our discussions is how to equip them, because you can either equip them with the bolters or the ion blasters. And look, we are like getting right into the meat of it. This book comes with several different factions you can choose from. You can also build your own faction. There's a build your own version in there. And
weird.
And you've got some secondaries. They have psychic powers, which,
I was actually surprised to see them have psychic powers. So I don't know why I was surprised.
Because in fantasy dwarves, which they are clearly not, they're their own thing, as a reference, we'll see referenced by the way the lore and the rules play out. But dwarves aren't known for their magic, even space magic.
Yeah, they're usually anathema. Jeez, I can't pronounce.
Good one. No, keep going. Words. Try it again.
Yeah, I will. I'll dig again. They usually don't like the magic-y sparkly stuff. So they're usually against it. They like their sparklies to be dug out of the ground.
But they have their own tree in here. Strength, I think some actually compelling things to take in the psychic stuff. And they've got a cool mechanic, which is the Judgment of the Ancestors.
Yeah, this is their essentially what we would call a mono faction bonus. Yeah, this is when you take 100% Votan and 100% of the same sub-faction, I'm assuming, you get access to this thing. Like, as it would be like for Crossfire for GSC or the Warpstorm table for Demons.
Yeah, if you get the collector box, it does come with some tokens too, so it's easy to track this thing. Although, if you're doing this without that, I would definitely suggest getting dice that you do not roll for any, so completely different color dice than you would normally roll during your hits and wounds, so nothing gets accidentally picked up or what have you. But you can allocate these judgment tokens to units of your opponent's units, and they can acquire them through many different ways. And it's kind of neat, especially theme-y wise. So each time an enemy unit destroys a Votan unit, you can give them a judgment token. They gain a judgment token.
Yep.
Each time the enemy unit successfully completes an action, like, or a psychic action, it gains a judgment token. So, hey, I see you over there doing something. Take this token.
Well, I just love it, the idea of like this wizened Votan just looking at you, trying to like dig up the data scry, and like, that's not how you dig, and just sitting there being judgmental, like, just doing a bad job there. Also, my system for judgment tokens, I'd probably use some kind of book. I'm not sure what you would call this book of judgment. But I would probably use a book.
Sounds like you're holding a grudge there.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, we kind of like, if it looks like a dwarf and it quacks like a dwarf, it may be a dwarf.
It's a League of Votan.
It's a League of Votan. Yeah.
And there's another way to get judgment tokens. Actually, there's a couple different ways, truth be told. But the third way in the basic set here is at the end of each of your opponent's turns, you can select one enemy unit within range of an objective marker that your opponent controls. That unit gains a judgment token.
I do love thinking thematically about them casting their judgments and being like, that's just the poor objective hold right there, son. You're going to be judged.
It goes on to explain that if they get into transports or whatever, they take them with them. You know, they never get rid of these judgment tokens.
So, you know, if you're at a 3-round event and you play the Love League of Votan first, you got to take the judgment tokens with you into your next game and your next game.
That's what it is. That's it.
And so, see how it is.
Pretty soon you're carrying around, you have to have a whole separate bag that you just carry around for the judgment tokens.
Or a book. I'm still not sure what you would call this book of, you know, judgment, but yeah.
Yeah, and so with one judgment token, this basically helps in the shooting. Right? Actually, not just the shooting phase. Just helps all around. One judgment token, an unmodified hit roll of 6, that attack automatically wounds the target, and then it gets progressively better. So with 2, it's on a 5+, and then on a 3, it's on a 4+. Then it goes on to say, note, if an attack automatically wounds the target as a result of this ability, then for the purposes of any other rules that are triggered on a particular wound roll, that attack is considered to have been made with an unmodified wound roll of a 6. Trust me, that's going to come up later.
So they saw how good Hail of Doom was and was like, you see, let's just make that a core ability, right? Because Hail of Doom for Asurani just wasn't ubiquitous enough across all of Craftworlds.
Another ability called the Magna Rail. These are things. There's a reason we're kind of laying the groundwork with this stuff here, because it's going to come up later. Some Votan weapons have the Magna Rail ability. Each time an attack is made with such a weapon, invulnerable saving throws cannot be taken against that attack. The second bullet point is on an unmodified wound roll of a 6. How are you going to get those? You can get them naturally or through this judgment mechanic. Mm-hmm. Excess damage that weapon inflicts is not lost. Instead, keep allocating excess damage to another model in the target unit until either all the excess damage has been allocated or the target unit is destroyed.
Now, we need to unpack this a little bit, because you do see this kind of a rule has been sprinkled kind of here, there, and everywhere across the game. The biggest examples would be the flails that are taken for
Death Guard.
Death Guard, in addition to Dark Angels Knights. They take the flail and the sergeant.
Oh, yeah. Flail weapons, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Deathwing Knights. And so, yeah, those are the only ones that I just have that attached to a specific piece of war gear. I think there's some other ways in previous editions, especially where you could have gotten it through other special rules, other, you know, Wall of Traits, etc. This is the first time we've seen this attached to a wholesale weapon like that, but something that from range. It's never been done from range to my knowledge. And for those of you who don't know, or maybe only play 40K, this is essentially how all multi-damage weapons in Age of Sigmar work.
Oh, good point.
If you hit a one wound model with a 2 damage weapon, you kill 2 of the units, 2 of the models in that unit rather than just one. And so people from AOS will be really familiar with this. People in 40K, this might come as a bit of a shock to how this is going to work. So you've got a unit of cultists, and I hit you with I think that does 6 damage, you lose 6 cultists. It's not one las cannon guy being hit by a las cannon, you killed one. That thing killed whatever you rolled for the damage.
Yeah, and there's different levels of magna rail. There are some smaller magna rails on troops, and then larger magna rails going up to the vehicles.
I mean, it makes sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love this, by the way. I think it's very powerful, but also unique to them, which is a cool mechanic. Although we'll talk about ways to stack it up and make it pretty devastating. The steady advance, that's another rule that's across a lot of the army, is that when you, the unit with this rule, which is I think most of them, ignores movement modifiers.
As they should. Very dangerous over short distances, but not known for sprinting, you know?
And they can, when they go to advance, they automatically add 3 unless they're accelerated, and then they add 6 instead. So you don't roll.
What is their base move? Their base move, what, 5 across the board?
Base move on the, we'll just go with just infantry. The troops themselves. Yeah, 5.
I mean, that makes sense, right?
Yeah. And then there are some other like jump pack units in the bikes that have the accelerated keyword.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
so like everyone else, they'll auto advance 6.
6. Yeah. But is it, you know, you don't roll them.
Realistically, for their advance, they min advance 8. They min move 8 when they decide to advance. Yeah?
Yes.
So that'd be the same as a 6-inch move. Just don't roll a 1, and you're as fast as, or a little bit faster than Votan, as long as you don't roll a 1 if you move 6 inches. So they're slow still, but they're not that slow. Like, that's not that much slower.
I like taking the random out of it, so you can really know exactly when is the right time to employ that, which is neat.
Yeah. And ignoring all the modifiers to advance and charge roll. So you ignore all the forests and the vents and the crags and cracks and the. Does that mean they also ignore things like Tanglefoot grenade?
Yeah, any or all modifiers.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so no caveats there. The next
big special rule
is the void armor. Each time an attack is made against this unit, your opponent cannot reroll the wound roll and cannot reroll the damage roll. That's big.
Tell me this is only on a handful of units, right? that's only the first dot point as well.
So it is only on a handful of units if you consider the fact that there are not a lot of units in
them. Yeah, proportionally, so, right?
It's only on like 6 units, but it turns out there's only 7 units in the book.
It's actually on all 7. But so the next bullet point is each time an attack is allocated to a model in this unit, the armor penetration characteristic of that attack is reduced by 1 to a minimum of 0. So very similar to the armor of contempt rule.
Wait a second. So you're telling me the berserkers that are essentially like mostly naked, they're wearing pants.
The berserkers, you're talking about the Sithonian berserkers that we've seen up on the Warhammer community site, which are shirtless and with fire, you know, holding big weapons.
I like to refer to them as the diminutive Sons of Horus berserkers. Thank you very much. Because they come from Chthonia for some reason.
I don't know. I think it's more of the definition of that word.
Yeah. It is.
And less a relation to the place.
Someone please paint them as Sons of Horus, though. That'd be hilarious. But they have void armor. That's why do they get void armor? They don't have any armor. They have an armor save of a 6+.
They're wearing a girdle and knee pad.
Pants. They've got pants, which is way better than the Chaos Possessed.
So. Yeah, it is. Just a power girdle goes a long way in the 41st millennium. Yeah. But getting Armor Contempt as standard, as in like... So Armor, for those people who don't know, Armor Contempt is attached to essentially a patch... A patch fix of the game of the competitive game of 40K, the balanced data slates, and the chapter approved and stuff like that. So they are subject to change. This piece of item here, this rule, this void armor is enshrined in the codex.
Baked in. That's right. Baked right into that baby.
Yeah, big difference. So changing and taking away armor contempt is something that is almost likely to happen at some point through the life of an edition. I don't think there's anything that's going to be taking that away from the good old lovers over here. And it's a very strong rule.
A fair amount of what's in this book is toughness 5 too. And a lot of armies out there kind of been making their bacon on the fact that they can reroll lots of things. Like how many of y'all been in games where Adeptus Auratus just feel like they just never fail because they reroll everything?
Everything.
Tau too. Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly right. And a lot of the time people are taking a huge amount of rerolls to get away around things like Leviathan, where you can't wound them on certain dice rolls or Deathwing or transhuman-like effects. And so this is just army-wide shutting all that down.
Yeah. The berserkers too, they have a feeling no pain.
So of course they do.
They're stouter than you might expect with their power girdles, their void girdles.
Yeah. Void girdles.
Yeah. But there's a lot. So I think the units are pretty designed pretty well. There's almost like I can think of a reason to take everything in this book, and it's going to be up to the generals to figure out how they put they slot them into their army, and it's also going to give like some replayability and some you know variance in between your games. I'm digging it, but well, hopefully we have time to get there in one show, although we'll probably cover it over the course of a couple of shows because brand new faction is going to be stuff to talk about.
You're absolutely right. They essentially have got like your major food groups covered, as so to speak.
Break down the food groups. Let's go.
Yeah, you have your core of your army in you know a couple of different HQ choices, and this is just upon release and in the codex. You know this stuff could be expanded upon different editions, different codexes. You have your ubiquitous HQ. You have your elite troop, which you know essentially your Devastator's equivalent.
Was the core like the breads or the wheat?
Yes, the carbs. The minimum required to make a meal, as in the minimum required to fill out a detachment, either a patrol or a battalion.
Is the bread at the top or the bottom of the pyramid? The food.
I think it's at the bottom.
Good. I think it's more of a. It's a I was going to be more if it's more of a pie, but here we are. you have your so you have all your major corners covered. You got your bike. You got your speedy bike unit. You have your Devastator equivalent, being the guys with the strength 8-4s. What are they called? Is it the Pioneers?
The Pioneers of the bikes.
It's the Hearthguard.
Yeah, the Brohir Thunderkin are the Devastator type stuff.
Yep. And then you have the Thunderkin, then you have the bikes, you have your HQs, you have your big chunky ubiquitous. Think of it, so this is very similar to the initial Primaris release in the fact that it's got the major food groups. You know, we've got a repulsor upon release, we have a Hecachunk, be a Hecaton Land Fortress, you know, your repulsor equivalent. We had Outriders, you've got the Pioneers, or whatever they're called, the guys on the bikes.
Is the Pioneers. Right?
Yep.
You have your, you know, Intercessors, we have our Hearthguard. Warriors, like it's just pretty much this is the pattern of release, and it's cool. It's cool to see it done in a brand new flavor, but very similarly. The only one that's a bit aberrant to the others is the Repentia equivalent, which we don't see given out all that often in the Berserkers.
I can't remember if they have a fight on death, but you know we'll get there.
They do. That's right. Automatically fight on death.
Yeah. So that's right. Without even spending it, they just have it built into their data slate. So let's go. There are five different HQs. One of them being the High Carl, which is Uthar the Destined, who comes from the Greater Thurian League. That is a specific faction. So you would have to be Greater Thurian League to take this character in your army. But let me tell you why you might consider it, especially as an early build. Is because he has an ability, which is on the community site. You've seen it, the Ancestral Fortune, which is once per battle round. You can make a hit roll, wound roll, damage roll, or saving throw for this model, or a friendly Greater Thurian League unit within 6 inches of them. You can change the result of that roll to a 6. For any rules purposes, this counts as an unmodified 6. So we've seen a combo. We've heard about unmodified 6s and what can be done.
Yeah, so he just auto gives you... just half kill or full kill a thing every turn.
So
just, see that knight half dead this turn.
To make just, that just happen, happens. you would need a judgment token on a unit. But because he also has a rule called the, and this is something that the regular call has, the grim efficiency. In each of your command phases, if every unit from your army is in the same league, excluding models that are on a line, you can select one enemy unit that is visible to the model. If you do so, that enemy unit gains one judgment token.
Sounds strong to me.
Yeah.
Look over there. I'm judging you.
Yeah. And he's also got an ability to reduce the damage characteristic, you know, of anything coming in to one. Mm-hmm. So
he also,
on a
he also gives, he gives chapter master rerolls. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Yeah. And captain reroll ones. He does a lot. He actually does a lot for your army.
Yeah, but the only caveat there is that you do have to take him in that particular faction.
Yeah, which is the scheme on the box art, right?
It is. Yeah,
the Greater Thurian. Yeah, I actually quite like their scheme. Is that we might talk about it later, but I'm wondering if that blue that they've got in the scheme is a new paint that we haven't seen, because I'm trying to figure out what blue that is. It's somewhere between Incubi Darkness and Stegodon Scale Green. I'm not sure if it's a new mix, but I like that blue, whatever it is.
I don't know if they've got a painting tutorial in the book here, but they are starting to put them up on the Warhammer YouTube page. Mm. A couple of them up there. And so he's 140 points, so twice the base points of what the non-name character is.
Ordinary Carl. Yep.
Yeah.
Just Carl.
Both of them have a 4+ invulnerable save. They got the void armor. Got the Eye of the Ancestors.
Yeah,
that's the one that lets them assign judgment tokens.
Oh, so you can just take a Wargear piece for a regular for just Carl.
Well, no, that's a special rule. The Eye of the Ancestors is key to the judgment. Although, so, you know, equipping this, I've built this, the character, the regular, I went with the non-named character because want to open up some faction choices, and you get to choose whether you put the Vulcanite Disintegrator on him or a Combi Bolter, and then you get to choose versus the basically what is a Power Fist or an Axe. And, you know, both of them are -3 AP. The axe is 2 damage. The fist is 3, but you have to -1 to hit.
Yeah.
It's +3 strength.
It's actually an interesting discussion because usually the power fist equivalent will be -2 strength, whereas their ones are +3 strength. So that only puts them to -7. So there actually is a decent argument to not taking one or the other, depending on the points, which I don't know yet. But the plasma axe will put you to -5 -3 2, which is definitely good enough for like 80% of situations. And then what you would want is if like you have a power fist equivalent to take, you'd be like, well, cool, if I go up against a knight or something toughness 7, this is just better than, you know, hands down better than the axe. But against the axe will be winning on 5s against those, and you'll be winning on 4s against like a rhino with the gauntlet. So I'm hoping they're not too different in price.
I'm actually banking on the fact that I'm going to be dishing out judgment tokens.
Oh, true. So then it doesn't matter. Like, if you just bypass it.
Yeah. So why not get forget that -1 and, you know, keep the AP and get the reliability in there. That's what I'm thinking. That's actually going to be a consistent theme with how I've chosen to equip some of these, or at least my initial thoughts on what to equip them with.
And so looking at it, they come with the axe at base, and then you can pay 10 more points for the gauntlet on top if you'd like, which takes them from 70 to 80, which is still totally acceptable. Just 80 points for this good HQ, really good.
Well, and you also a couple of different options. You can build them in with the Rampant Crest, which allows them to dish out an invulnerable save to units around him, or you can teleport with him. You could put this guy like in almost like an assassin role.
Man, who says they're slow? Just blink around. Also, I want to unpack at some point. We're going to do I haven't read the fluff of this army yet, and a lot of this fluff is essentially, for all intents and purposes, this is new, because the last time we had fluff for this army was in second edition.
The Votann are a very specific thing. It's like they're the ancestor cores. They are, and the units we're talking about are the kin. They are not Votann. Votann are these incredibly powerful and potent AI. There's even a bit of an Easter egg in the lore here that talks about one of the cores, the Votann cores, that was gobbled up by High Fleet Leviathan.
That's cool. That is quite cool. I am noticing a lot of parallels between some of the names of these weapons and some of the names of other armies. Like, they have Bolter. They also have Ion. So there is like some Tau flavor, some Imperial flavor. It's all in a little mixing pot somewhere in the middle, which I'm cool. I want to find out why, and I want to unpack that fluff. But we're here to talk about rules, right?
Well, look, the lore is going to be what attracts a lot of people to this. And the kin society, as it were, there's a lot of links to like pre-Imperium stuff.
Mm.
And yeah, it's neat stuff. Like, I don't think these folks knew who the Emperor was when they showed back up in space. We are talking about some of the stuff you can do and what you can do with your models, 100%. But the lore you're talking about is the first thing I cracked open when this book got in my hands, because I wanted to know what are they about. And it's cool. And there's enough there that also what you remember about what is a distant cousin to what this army was if you played back in first and second edition, and then like the story that went around, I don't even know if this is printed anywhere, but the story that all went around the players was that the Tyranids ate the squats.
Yeah, there was only a small population of squats on a couple of worlds, and the Nids went straight through them.
Yeah, and so that's why I thought it was cool to see that little bit of throwback, that homage, or maybe even just a direct link to High Fleet Leviathan eating them up.
Yeah, I'd love if they had like a, I mean, I haven't unpacked the build your own varieties, but I'd love if there was a bug hunting league. Like, they're just like, we want vengeance, and they just hunt bugs.
Yeah, so Carl here, he gets the Kindred Hero. Core units within 6 inches. Each time a model in that unit makes an attack, reroll the hit roll of 1.
Mm.
Nice. And that's just his aura around him. 4+ invulnerable save and the grim efficiency, which is the one that lets him just assign a judgment token in each of your command phases. And there's also a stratagem that lets you do that twice, but you can't give this, give it to the same unit. You can dish out two, but you can double up in that way on the same unit. Mm. And then with the teleportation crest, I don't know that I would use this character in that way, but happy to be proven wrong by some savage generals out there. I think I want this guy on the table, buffing things around him, almost kind of playing goalie.
Oh, it just means he gets Dave Strike for free, right?
Yeah.
As in, it starts off the table. So he's not blinking on the table.
Yeah, you have to set him up in the teleportation dock when you
And beam him down. I really like the crest. Really like the crest.
There's probably a stratagem, if I remember right, that will maybe allow you to do something with that, but it might be the other units. Mm. So the next thing is the Einherjar Champion. 4 attacks base. You can, and this is where I was talking about, you get the choice of doing the Mass Hammer or the Darkstar Axe. And the hammer is x2 strength instead of just the plus, and -3 and d3+3 damage. But the Darkstar Axe has a bit of a special rule here. Each time an attack is made with this weapon, make 2 hit rolls instead of 1. Each time an attack is made by the weapon is allocated to an enemy model. That enemy model cannot use any rules to ignore the wounds it loses.
Oh, dear. Oh dear! So that's no wound gain. That's going straight through the Catan wound gain, and straight through the Ghazghul and the Abaddon. That's very strong.
8 attacks. You probably got a judgment token at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, -3 AP. It's only 1 damage apiece, but you know he's swinging a lot, and you're going to take the damage once it hits you.
It's got a lot of special rules as well. Each time this model ends a charge move, select one enemy within range of the model and roll a d6. If it's a 6 or beats the toughness characteristic, they suffer d3 mortals. That's nice. While a friendly League Hearthguard unit is within 6, you can reroll wound rolls, so it becomes lieutenant specifically for Hearthguard. And it's a -1 damage as well. It's very good.
Yeah, that's the Exo Armor.
But here's the best one. Ram Shield. Each time a melee attack is made against this model, -1 from the wound roll. And this guy is toughness 5 with a 2+ armor save.
With void armor.
You can't reroll.
And you can't reroll.
It's -1 to wound and you can't reroll. He's actually really hardy. He's so much harder to kill.
Is he the new fridge?
Might be, man. Might really be the new fridge. It's also an upgrade for the Waverfield Crest that gives him a base 4 up invulnerable save and puts his wounds up to 6. So he's -1 damage, no rerolls to hit or wound, 2+ with -1 incoming rend, extra wound, 4+ invuln. Wow. Wowie. Tell me he's a couple of points.
80, I think, is what he is.
90.
Sorry, 90, yeah.
And you pay 10 for the hammer.
Yeah.
The fact is, you pay about that much for another, you know, like I pay 10 more points for the Empress Champion, yeah? Who is probably on average a little bit killier, but this guy's a little bit more like at the extremes, like at the extreme of anti-armor. He has the fist at the extremes of anti-infantry, and the Empress Champion somewhere in the middle. But the Empress Champion doesn't buff anybody else. This guy actually buffs other stuff, which I think he's a bargain. I think he's great for 100 points.
Model is cool. I painted him in a yellow color scheme. So this way, I'll talk about that later on.
Does he have a helmet option?
No.
So he's in a massive. Oh my god. Oh. All right, you can take it, Red. Pontificate. Why that's so stupid.
No, I mean I feel like we've beaten the dead horse on the helmet thing. I'm really glad, honestly. You know, we go back to how we brought in this new faction and everything. I'm really glad to see, in certain regards, they brought in some mechanics that work. It's very clear that they have brought in what they tried to make is some really unique mechanics, somewhat between how the judgment tokens played out. I mean, a lot of people will draw some parallels to marker lights, I'm sure, between the Tau. But then as we start looking at I really want to step away from the mechanics for a second to look at the aesthetic. I think some people saw the similarities between some of their suits and the robots that the Mechanicum have, right?
Or like the Men of Iron stuff?
Yes, the Men of Iron piece and how that all plays in. And so I think they've kind of seen that connection. And, I think that's a good bridge.
Oh, you're talking about like the big robots, the plastic,
the Castellan robots.
So the Castellan robots versus the Men of Iron that the Votan have, along with, I mean, the Votan void suits and their armor, and then they have the same kind of helmets that the Castellan robots visors are, right? Like it's like astronaut.
It's helmets, real similar.
Right? Yeah, very similar. I'm still not going to say that I'm fully on board with the aesthetic, but I do appreciate, like, that's my own personal view. I'm not dogging the what the design team has come up with necessarily. I'm sure there are a lot of people that really like the way that they look. I think that they are definitely, you know, they don't look like a bunch of gangers or you know, hive scum like the GSC look like. They don't, you know, they're definitely not from the Imperium in a lot of ways. So they are their own thing, and I think that's cool. But the helmets, we go back to again, like, I'm just waiting for the race that there's a faction out there that understands to just keep your helmet on.
Their armor looks almost as if it was, like, it probably has some either invisible dome or whatever that flips up, like they are wearing, like, an astronaut's helmet that's just clear.
Yeah, but even then, you know, they're champions, right? Their champions don't have helmets on or anything like that. I really think it goes back to, like, the guard are probably the best at keeping their helmets on. And the ones that take their helmets off, it's because they probably got, like, tired of wearing it all the time. And I absolutely 100%, there's a lot of people out there right now that are nodding their head, understanding exactly what I'm talking about, but at least the guard keeps their helmets on.
Okay, so to my knowledge, and I haven't read the fluff, I've only read what JW has put out there, these guys are spacefaring. They're mostly a spacefaring people, yeah? They've spent a lot of time in the void. Their rule is void armor. You'd think they'd know the importance of a good helmet, and yet...
We go back to, I think that we've talked about it, you know, suspension of belief and whatnot. There's nothing saying that there isn't some kind of, like, invisible whatever field thing that I'm not saying it's going to protect you, but at least allow them to, like, they can have it up and they can still, you know, breathe or whatever. So, like, okay, I'll hold off on that one, but I'm pretty sure. And I want to go to this, you know, magna rails. We were talking about the difference between ions and bolters and magna rails. Like, I really feel like, and not in a bad way, because I don't mind for all the Tau players out there, I feel like they've stolen some thunder from the Tau that were supposed to be this emerging faction that had the super high technology. And then out of nowhere, like from deep space, the love shows up and the love's like, oh yeah, well, we've got super versions of all your fancy weapons.
If Star Trek has taught us anything, the further you go out in space, the more high level it gets.
Yeah, man. Next level for sure.
The other HQ, or sorry, the next HQ is the Grimnir, and that is the Psyker. And they get the Skynrot discipline. And I want to draw your attention to a power called Null Vortex. This is a malediction with a warp charge value of 8. 8 is pretty unheard of right now. Mm-hmm. That's astronomically more difficult to cast than a lot of the other powers out there. So it must be something good, right? You would be right. If manifested, select one enemy unit within 12 inches of the Psyker until the start of your next psychic phase. Models in that unit cannot use any invulnerable saves.
Damn. When I heard the casting cost and the name, I was like, I bet you this is Null Zone. And it turns out it's Null Zone.
It's not a -1. It's just gone.
Gone. Turn it off. Flick the switch. Very good power.
Yeah, and this is one of the units that comes with a couple of... It comes with the Psyker and then two of those little floating robots we're talking about with some weapons, do some damage.
What's cool is that they absorb the perils of the warp for you. So it's actually really funny. This guy casts two and can deny one of a kin of a librarian or a sorcerer. Each time this unit suffers a perils of the warp, if this unit contains one or more core V models, one of those models is destroyed and the effects of the perils of the warp are ignored. I like that. That's cool. So whatever perils you have, it just gets absorbed by the little drones and sparks out.
Yeah, that's so psychic powers. Got a whole tree. Pretty neat. And then there's the Brokir Iron Master. That's one of the ones we've seen that has also another bunch of little robots around it.
Yep. Is this the, I'm assuming this is the Tech Marine equivalent?
It is. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't know if y'all remember the White Dwarf, the Tech Priest White Dwarf model they put out a couple years ago. I'm going to try to work that into one of these.
Oh, that'll be cool.
What did I say about the food groups? Covered is what I said about the food groups.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk a little bit about the Warlord traits, and then let's discuss like how to equip your Hearthkin warriors, the core of your army. Well, I shouldn't say core is a keyword. There's a lot of core keyword. But like the, sorry, a kind of a interesting distribution of cores. But how do you equip these as far as like weapons go? Because they have a lot of different options. We'll see you all in a minute.
Yep.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, everybody. Hurricane Warriors 20 come in the starter box, and you got a couple different options here. You got, well, tons of different options as far as like weapons and different things to include on the unit. I think you really can't go wrong with whatever melee option that you'd like to go with. But the real choice is either do you go bolters or ion blasters? And I know
which one I like.
Well, let's tee it up. So the bolters are 24-inch Hunter 2, which just means they shoot twice. Strength 4, neg 1 AP 1 damage. The ion blaster is 18 inches, strength 5, neg 2 AP 2 damage. And there's a couple of stratagems that you can use to support those weapon profiles.
Do the cost the same?
The points-wise? So the ion is one extra point. So the Hurricane Warrior is 11 points per model, and the ion blaster is 1 point extra. So it would make it 12.
Yeah, dude, 11 points a model for these guys is a good price point. Very good.
You get so you get a couple of special weapons to add to there. So you can add a missile launcher, the L7, pretend they were dead missile launcher, and then a Magna Rail rifle to that.
Yeah, man, their missile launcher is so much better than the Space Marine missile launcher. It's less range, but my lord.
Well, 30 inches strength 9, neg 2, D6 damage.
Yeah, the blast profile is what I'm after. So it's range 30, Hunter D6, strength 5 minus 1. So that is vastly superior and to blast. The frag rounds. Superior to the frag rounds. I like the Iron Blaster. Range 18 isn't that big a deal. Hunter, did we cover what Hunter does? Can you advance and shoot Hunter weapons? Or
you can't. Hunter just basically is the basic. That's their basic weapon profile.
Yeah, and so instead of having to do rapid fire and we've already seen that they don't.
Shooty shoot, just zaps. Yeah. Zaps. You can call it whatever you want, but it's that basically denotes that you're not advancing with it, you're not heavy with it, it's not rapid fire, it's just the blame blame.
Well, I think it depends on what you're kitting these guys out for. I mean, if you're taking the 30-inch missile launchers, I think you want the gun with the longer range. If you want to get up at tight and personal and take the, Ektan, plasma beamers and stuff like this, then 100% with the Iron Blaster. I personally think the Iron Blaster is just better. Strength 5 minus 2-2, to me, is just a better profile, especially only 1 point. For 1 point more than the regular gun, 6 inches less range, one less shot, but one better strength, one better AP, one better damage. To me, that's a much better weapon.
I'm inclined to go with that as well, but let's talk about the stratagems and Red, hear what you think. So there's a stratagem for one command point called Optimized Volley. Uses stratagem in the shooting phase when a Votan unit from your army is selected to shoot. Until the end of the phase, each time a model in that unit makes an attack with a bolt weapon, an unmodified hit roll of 6, one additional hit is scored. If the target unit contains 11 or more models, when this stratagem is used, then 2 additional hits are scored. So remember, you can take the Hearthkin up in units of 20. So
I think it's a big deal.
That's one CP. And then the other stratagem is the Ion Storm. Uses this stratagem in the shooting phase when a Votan unit from your army is selected to shoot. Until the end of the phase, each time a model in that unit makes an attack with an ion weapon, an unmodified wound roll of 6 inflicts 1 mortal wound on the target in addition to any normal damage to a maximum of 6 mortal wounds. It's a 1 command point stratagem if the unit contains 11 or fewer models. Sorry, up to 10. If the unit contains 10 or 11 or more, it's 2 CP.
I understand why there could be a debate between these two, just because the ion does seem like the go-to, in my opinion. I think it opens up well. The stratagem adds on well. But I can really see the argument for the volume that comes out of the bolters. I mean, you imagine if you've got two, and the models are so efficient for their points. If you have two 20-man squads of this, and one was with the bolters and one was with ion, I feel like you could handle a lot of things that are on the field right now in front of you.
And like we said, I mean, most people in the current version of the game play with a battalion. You're going to have like a couple of squads of these guys. So I think specializing them makes a lot of sense.
And it's the way it works. You can select up to 2 different options from the following list. And then if it contains 20 or more, then you get to select two more options. So that's why you could have a missile launcher and a rail, or two, sorry, you know, basically two, four special weapons.
Yeah,
so,
it's important we unpack this one. These guys have got like a data sheet akin to the Plague Marine, you know? When you open up the Death Guard book and you look at the Plague Marine data sheet, and it's just the whole freaking page of options upon options upon options. It's going to be, I think there is a case for just taking dudes with the ion plasmas and no upgrades, keeping them to 12 points a model, and just being like, yeah, cool, done. That's enough. And then I could also see the case for keeping them lean, keeping a mean 10 guys sitting in the back holding your objectives with a couple of missiles just shooting down range. It's good. They've done a good job on this data sheet because it all makes a lot of sense to me.
And they also get some special rules opened up to them. You can get a meta pack, which gives them the meta keyword. The multi-wave comms array, which gives them the comms keyword. These are important, which are some stratagems and other things. And then the pan-spectral array, which gives them the scanner keyword. So there's obviously some stratagem support like we just talked about.
Mm.
But
That scanner, in addition to the keyword, also means that they ignore light cover when they shoot. So it's almost as if you're adding an extra rend to all their weapons, which is one of the keys, I think, to why I reckon ions are better. Because as soon as you get to neg two ignores cover, it's very, very strong.
The medic keyword allows them to turn, you know, the first unfailed to damage to zero, but it also opens up the way to bring back models. So, you know, a 20 kin unit here where that is very difficult to take away, and then they bring back three models.
Mm-hmm. And that's in addition,
strong.
The sergeant of this unit, the Thane, has two wounds and comes with a 4+ invuln as standard. Just comes with a 4+ invuln. So you can just tank on that guy for as long as you can, then resurrect him if you've got a medipack. And also the medipack, in addition to giving you the keyword, zeros the first instance of damage, the first failed instance of damage.
Yeah.
So you could just try and roll those four ups until you fail the first one, zero it, and then keep going on. Just keep rolling through. There's a huge propensity to spike. And then, cool, you kill through the Thane, you kill three or four more guys. Oh, cool, we're rezzing a bunch of back because you've got a medipack and you've got to go through the 4+ again.
The Saldari shenanigans with the
XR. It is, man. Mm-hmm. 100%.
I don't mind that at all. I think it's cool that you can have this kind of big, you know, thick unit here with decent weapon options. And I am leaning towards the Ion too, is for like how to build out the gate. But I think that the Bolter fire stacks up really well, especially when you go and factor in the judgment tokens.
That's fair.
So there is a case, you know, depending on, but if you want a unit that's kind of self-sufficient and not relying upon that, I think you would lean more towards the Ion. But if you've built kind of a judgment engine, then maybe the Bolters are the way to go.
Yeah, true. I mean, we're talking like the strength on these weapons matters all that much. You know, you can just play in such a way that it does not. In fact, the Great Aetherian League, the one that that Uthar's from, their whole shtick, their whole like chapter tactic is that they count as having one more judgment counter on.
They do.
So I've just reading that verbatim. Each time model with this custom makes an attack against a target has one or more judgment tokens, the enemy unit is considered to have one more. So as long as you have one, you auto wound on fives to hit, or you automatically bypass the sixes to hit auto wound and go straight to the fives. Really strong when you just want to sprinkle everywhere. And you're right, that does make the bolt guns look a lot better.
So talking about this medic keyword we were just discussing, and that they use the combat surgery, use this stratagem in your command phase, select one Votan medic unit from your army that is below starting strength and not within engagement range of any enemy units, up to D3 destroyed models are returned to that unit.
Fantastic strat.
One CP.
Oh.
I was gonna say, I mean, at least they don't have an apothecary, but
yeah, they're all apothecaries. Yeah.
You build them in there. It's you pay a little for it, and then the CP for it. But I think it is there, and there are one wound models. The rest of the army, or sorry, the rest of the unit is one wound models. But with the void armor, it's gonna be
tough. They're a lot tougher than they look on paper, man. You look at the data sheet, and you're like, this is fine. 4+ armor save, toughness 4, no problems, no rerolls. Essentially the same armor save as Marines when
they're they have a 4+ base save, so not 3+.
Well, I was about to say armor contempt. If you're shooting them, like it's funny that they're the same against a bunch of rend. Like it doesn't matter that much because a lot of the time you'll have a 5+ invuln. If you want to have one, you can have one from any regular Carl can give you a 5+ invuln. So the 4+ whatever, it's only, you know, worse against small arms fire. It's the same or better against, you know, big arms fire. So yeah, I think they're really good. 11 is coming in at only 11 points a model. I mean, what's a Necron Warrior? Like, do we want to hurt people's feelings?
I mean, you can't hurt that which does not exist. Adam. No, 13 points a model.
13 points.
That's right. 260 points for 20 of them.
Just to put it in perspective, also moves 5 inches, but we don't call them slow, do we? Same weapon skill, blister skill, same strength and toughness, same wounds. 1 point, so 2 points less, your love warriors have one more attack and some less leadership but the same save for 2 less points. Oof. Mind you, the guns aren't actually. I mean, 24-inch rapid fire 1 at strength 4 minus 1. It's not too dissimilar from the bolter for the warriors.
I like the idea of this 20 going across the field, hanging down. And this is where I'd actually like to point out one of the warlord traits. Here is that there is a warlord trait called the Unrelenting Toil. While a friendly league core unit that is performing an action is within 6 inches of the warlord, that unit can shoot without that action failing.
Big deal.
Very good. Very good. And necessary.
I mean, there are some other nice warlord traits on here, but, you know, that might not be a bad one out of the gate.
Can we talk about Horus's own Chthonian Berserkers for a moment?
These are not Horus's Berserkers. So, yes, so, we can.
Somehow, the Power Girdle gives them Strength and Toughness 5. Just put it out there.
They're not the only Strength and Toughness 5.
But they're definitely the least clothed Strength and Toughness 5.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, no, I will give it, like, toughness does not necessarily, like, constitute thick armor or whatever,
it's
right?
It's true, it's true.
Clearly, it has nothing to do with whether or not you've got a helmet on or not. But, you know, toughness could be a whole other thing. Really, it's when it comes down to the fact that, what's their armor save again?
6+.
Okay, so, okay, we get that. Yeah, that most of them aren't wearing shirts. Okay, so they go to 6. But they do all have void armor, right? The rule?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, they'll be all right.
Summed up. Oh, we can end the episode. It's all done.
They have 2 wounds apiece as well. So without,
yeah,
you know, rerolling, it's going to be tough. And then with the feel no pain. So that's they're augmented. Each time a model in this unit loses a wound, roll 1d6, adding 1 to the result if the damage characteristic of attack was 1. On a 5+, the wound is not lost. That means, like, it's bolter fire. On a 4+, the wound is not lost.
I have some concerns about these units. They come with 3 attacks each, and they're equipped at stock with a heavy plasma axe, which we've already seen the profile for elsewhere, but it's essentially the same one as it comes on the champion that we unpacked, but it has 2 profiles instead of 1. It has the sweep profile for 2 attacks at strength user, which will be 5, minus 3, 1 damage. So they'll have 6 attacks each at rend 3, 1 damage, and then they can go to 3 attacks each at strength 6, minus 3, 2 damage. These guys are Repentia. They're 2 Repentia stuck together with more toughness than both, and they're costing 22 points a model. And they automatically,
like, 4 wounds or 4 damage or whatever. They're reasonable on the damage output.
Yeah, so the damage output for the points is fine. Like most things in 9th edition, if it's a melee unit and it touches you, you're probably dead. That's ubiquitous for most things in the game at the moment. Specific melee units, that's totally fine. But yeah, the durability. I mean, I look at these guys and I see what Gene Stealer Aberrants wish they were, right? like Gene Stealer players look at these guys and like,
point.
Wow, if only. If only. Yeah. You can also take the Concussion Maul, which is essentially, I mean, it's called a maul, but for all intents and purposes, it's a, what's the two-handed chainsword called?
Eviscerator.
Eviscerator. Essentially, it's an Eviscerator. It's x2 strength, -3, 3 damage. Well, I actually think the Eviscerator is only 2 damage, and it's a -1 to hit. But, you know, Judgment Tokens, who cares? Who cares about -1 to hit? Just hit them and wound them on 4s. Mind you, weirdly, they gave them a gun. They gave them the mole grenade.
It's
launcher,
a unit. So
funny.
You upgrade a model to basically be 2 models get the mole grenade launcher, which can fire indirect.
It's pretty funny. It's pretty funny that they take a entirely melee unit and they're like, have a mortar. Here you go, son. Does that happen in the American Armed Forces? Do you guys get your melee units and then just give them a mortar out there? Is that how that works?
Nope.
Fair.
Not remotely.
That was the best answer ever.
Rule that we've been talking about, the fight on death, is actually called the Cyberstems, and it also allows them to reroll charges.
It's a very good rule. They have very good rules.
Yeah. Jerry was out on this unit for me because the fact that you kind of want to do a lot of shooting. And this is before I looked at the book itself. And I want to talk about, we're skipping over, at least at this point, the Iron Heir Hearthguard, which is another unit in the Exo Armor. And yep, the Exo Armor is the rule. Sick. Yeah, that's the one that you subtract one damage from the characteristic that we talked about on the character, but anybody with Exo Armor gets that. But there's a transport called the Sagittar. And this is something you can take as a unit of 1 to 2 models, and they split when you put them down. But it's got a great rule called the Mounted Assault. And this is, I don't think we've seen anything like this in another codex. So Mounted Assault, if this unit contains 2 models, then before the battle, at the start of the declare reserves and transport steps of the mission sequence, you can select 1 Hearthkin warrior or berserker unit that contains 10 models. If you do so, the unit is split into 2 units, each containing 5 models. You assign where they go, which start the battle embarked on one of these Sagittar. So you can take a unit that cannot normally split and then split it and then put it in this transport. And then these transports go on the table.
It's freaking wild. It's a unit that gives you combat squads.
Yeah, I think that's pretty neat.
It's really neat. It's really unique. It's not a thing I ever thought I like. It's not a thing you ever expected to see. I think it's cool. Yeah.
This doesn't get the Sagittar doesn't get the rail cannon, but it does get the beam weapons, which you haven't even talked about. We've been talking about all this stuff, haven't talked about the beam rule.
I mean, I've been dancing around it like in fear, but yeah.
But again, I'm actually leaning towards things with more volume of fire. So if we can jump. So the Sagittar, again, that's the neat thing is that these berserkers, you can take a unit of 10, which why wouldn't you? They seem pretty cool. And then put them in the army and actually get them across the table. Because I think if you have 1 assault unit, then of course, what is your opponent going to fire at? The only thing that comes close. That's like you've made the target decisions for them. But if you can give them a little bit of a help getting across the table in the form of Sagittar, maybe it becomes more attractive outside of just a status late. The Pioneers, that's the bikes, those come in the starter set. They have a couple different, they're 30 points apiece, which I think is a pretty good price point for a toughness 5, 3 wound model with a 4+ save that moves 12.
It's exactly the same as Space Marine bikes for the same profile, essentially. Space Marine bikes move 2 more inches and have 1 better save, but have less attacks and way, way worse guns comparatively.
They get a pregame move. They can move up to 12. I have to stay out of 9 inches. There's, of course, some stratagem support for them, but they have a couple different gun options. They have the High Las Rotary Cannon, which I think is probably the superior option here, but yes. Correct me if I'm wrong. It is 9 shots, 109, strength 6, -2 AP, 1 damage.
It's very good, man.
Or you can go with the Ion Beamer, which is the strength 7, -2, 2 damage beam weapon. Mm-hmm. And then you've got some other weapons on them with the Magna Coil Auto Cannon, Hunter 3, strength 7, -1, 2 damage. Mm-hmm. And they have grenade launcher. They have a shotgun. They come with the Bolt Revolver and the Bolt Shotgun, which are strength 5, -1 AP, 1 damage weapons. And then you can get some keywords on them, the Searchlight, the Scanner, the Comms, and Void Armor, of course, Steady Advance, Judgment. What's not to like?
Yeah. And for every 3 models in a unit, and you can have 3 to 6, you get one of those big, spicy special weapons we talked about. Man, that rotary cannon really just is what every assault cannon wishes it was. Like the Ren 2 is so much better than the Ren 1. You're losing 3 shots in the exchange between the two, but Ren 2 is where you want to be.
When you are building this model, the weapon is actually held in. So you put 1 gunner per 3 on the back,
yep.
And the arms form together, and there's 2 little like pegs that hold the weapon in. And if you are careful, you don't have to glue it in. You can switch out the weapon. There is only 1 bit that is shared between the 2 weapons that go on the back. And it's like the viewfinder scanner that fits on the very back of the weapon. I promise you, no one's ever going to notice it's not there on one of those. You also run the risk. It's not like it's a sturdy plastic or whatever. And as long as you're careful, you can actually switch out the weapons without damaging the model.
The beam weapon is an interesting one. So I've made a great many memes out of broad strokes saying that anything in this game that draws a line, any rule that draws a line, is bad. And I've made a great song and dance about reading them out on my other show and being like, ha ha ha, stupid weapon draws a line, must be bad. And I've been right in, I would say, every case. And now I'm absolutely wrong. These things are terrifying.
What do you want to summarize with beams do?
Well, they work. They work very similar to how all the other ones are. You pick a model within range, and you roll to hit against that model. Then you draw a line from where the beam hit to your base, and everything that the line crosses gets hit by the profile. Takes a hit from the profile, so to speak. That's correct, yeah?
Yes.
But these profiles, wow. And again, when we just pointed out that the damage can bleed over as well on sixes to wound.
That's the magna. That's the magna rail. That's a different one.
And that's on the... Oh, true. Sorry. Apologies. But yeah, these profiles, like just to unpack the one on the Hecachonk, some of the beam weapons that are out there is just crazy. So... Firstly, the Iron Beamer is kind of the baby one, but the SP Heavy Conversion Beamer is two shots, so you draw two beams, range 30, it's Hunter 2, strength 8, minus 3, 4 damage, and each time an attack is made with this weapon that hits a unit, if the unit was hit, is wholly more than 15 from the firing model, an additional hit is scored against that unit. So,
strength 8, neg 3, 4 damage.
Just land... Bang, 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 bang. And you can have, I think you can have multiple of these per, we can only have one SP. I can have multiple of the small beam ones, the ion beamers, that are the two shots, strength 7, minus 2, 2. So you can just rack up so many shots here, there, and everywhere. It's really going to be interesting to see which of these profiles take. There's a lot of competition here between the Magna Rail special rules, the beam special rules, which ones are going to be fit for purpose, which ones are going to be better for this meta, this environment, these matchups. I just think the beams are really good. For what they are, I wouldn't have thought they'd have such range. I wouldn't have thought they'd have 30-inch range on them. I thought they'd be much smaller, which is what we've seen from the vast majority of line drawing rules that aren't like orbitable bombardment-esque rules. They're all been like, you know, like Mortarion's gun is a great example of a rule that draws a rule that draws a line. I think he's 12 or 18 inches.
Lantern I think is 18 inches.
Mm. So yeah, I think the beams are.
But it only is like one hit. These are two and three hits.
Yeah, dude, two and three hits. It's a thing. It's a thing people are going to need to know.
Yeah,
and it's going to be a bit of a skill check, I think, for the Votann players as well.
I do think that in the early days, if you take the Hecaton Land Fortress, that's what we're talking about, the Hecachonk, is the heavy Magna Rail Cannon is heavy 1, strength 14, neg 4, AP 2d3 plus 6 damage with the Magna Rail rule. And if we go all the way back to Earthar the Destined in his Ancestral Fortune, so Grim Efficiencies, a unit to put a judgment token on him, changes the hit roll of the Hecaton Land Fortress Magna Rail to a 6. Then that's 2d3 plus 6 damage going through.
Yeah, man.
No invulnerable saves with the Magna Rail. And neg 4 AP is going to get rid of a lot of AP, get a lot of armor out there.
It's interesting to see where the Tau ended up getting it from. I wonder what they traded for such technology. Like,
so let's think of what can 2d3. So 2d3 plus 6 damage. That is on average 12. What 8 damage? 8 almost 9.
It'd be 10 damage on average. Yeah, the average on 2d3 is a 4.
I guess no, it's 1.5. We go 9 damage. Fine, yeah. 9 damage. 9 damage kills most units outside of Space Marines.
It really does. And also kills 9 cultists out of a unit of 10. Surprisingly,
all the Dire Avengers people have been taken.
Because you only have that 5 up Aspect Warrior save, which you fingers crossed pray you get. Oh, look, you don't. Magna Rail says no.
Yeah, and you know the Lightning Fast does nothing for you in this instance.
Yeah.
So that seems good, you know.
Seems good, my dude.
I mean, so the Land Fortress is 230 points base. And that is the biggest Magna Rail. Most of the other Magna Rail stuff, like from the troops, is not that much damage. So there, as an example, the Hearthkin Warriors is just D3 plus 3. So, you know, 4 damage, 5 damage, not as spectacular as the 9, but still pretty good.
I am of the opinion that this thing is going to be a problem. Just putting it out there.
The Fortress or the Magna in general?
The Fortress. I think the chassis is too good. I think that just the base chassis, the points is fine. 230 points for something that does this is fine. It's about the same as equivalents out there, possibly a little bit under. You know, I think it says more about things like the Repulsor Executioner being overcosted than it does about the Hecachonk being undercosted for the damage output that it does.
Toughness 8, 16 wounds, 2 plus save.
That's the thing. The toughness 8 and 2 plus save with void armor.
Void armor, yeah.
Cracking that 2 plus is hard enough when it has essentially Armor of Contempt and Toughness 8. Things like Melters, it still gets a 5 up against a Melter. But you're telling me your melters hit on, let's say, hit on threes with no rerolls, wound on fours with no rerolls, and then you still get a save against them. Killing these things is going to be so variable, and the turns where you line up all your big boys to try and take one of these things down and you miss, you're just going to lose a game, I think. And it's going to be, I mean, you talk about a knight, yeah, everyone knows kind of how many shots they need to go through a toughness 8, 20-ish wound, 4+ or 5+ invuln. Because, you know, they're not getting an armor save. If you're shooting a gun that's going to kill a big knight, they're not giving them their freaking armor save unless you're, you know, you've got one wound left and you're just trying to kill them with a las gun because you're funny. And I totally did that. But that 2+ is a big problem. Is a big problem. Because that 2+ means they're taking a 4+ armor. They're taking out a 50-50 against Rend 3, which is the most ubiquitous seen anti-armor profile, is a Rend 3 profile. And usually it's strength 8. Unless it's a las cannon or strength 9. So hitting them on 3s, no rerolls. If you're a marine, wounding them on 4s, no rerolls. They get a 4+ if you rend 3 and 16 wounds, and you have ways to heal them through the guy, the HQ choice we've already covered. These things are good, man. These things are going to be, they might be a dominant piece in the table.
So you think just put, you know, 600 points of Hecaton Land Fortresses on there and hope for the best?
There's the full chunk, 600 points a chunk. Yeah, for sure. I mean the model, I'm waiting to see the model in real life before I cast judgment, because I've seen some angles of it that I don't love. I've seen some angles of it that I do love, like the Torox when it came out. But I look at this, I look at the points, I look at the weapons, I look at the defensive profile. I'm like, this thing can't be bad. Like, it can't be bad, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of guns. It holds troops. It's got a great weapon on its back that can be buffed by one of the characters you're probably taking anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all its guns are good.
What's not to like?
Exactly right, man. What's not to like? It also has you can give the scanner keyword, which means it also ignores light cover. So all those guns, I mean, every gun, there's not a gun on this. There's not a gun you can take that's worse than AP2 on this thing. It's impossible. So whatever you take, it's AP2, probably get it to ignores cover, and you're just happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if there are any true, like, wrong choices or just levels of correct with this weapon, with these weapons.
So there's also, you know, we talk about the scanner and those words that open up other keywords. So the stratagem that opens us off the scanner, the Votan scanner, is like an Auspex scan. It's 2 command points. Use a stratagem at the end of your reinforcement step. If your opponent's movement phase selects one Votan scanner unit from your army that is not within engagement range of any shooting units, that unit can shoot as if it were your shooting phase, but models can only target a single eligible enemy unit that have set up reinforcements within 12. This is not limited to infantry or whatever. This is any Votan scanner unit, and you can take the Pan Spectral Scanner on the Hecaton Land Fortress and zap people.
So you're telling me this thing, the Hecachunk, can just Auspex scan intercept?
Yes.
Wow.
As long as it's not within engagement range. And your opponent sets up within 12.
How many CP?
2.
Oh, good, good. Please tell me it's 2 at least. Whew. Okay. All right, yeah, it's very strong.
Yeah, here's another interesting one. So remember, we're talking about comms. You can get the comms on several units, and I believe including, the Pioneers. There is a multi-wave system jammer, a 2 command point stratagem. So these are pricey in today's world. Keep that in mind. And I do want to point out, my initial thought when I was reading through this was that if these guys started with 12 command points, it would seem pretty bonkers.
I do agree with that.
So use a stratagem at the start of any phase, select one Votan comms unit from your army, then select one enemy unit within 12 inches of that unit. Until the end of the phase, the enemy unit cannot be affected by any aura abilities that units in your opponent's army have.
Yikes.
So remember I said that the Pioneers get a pregame move?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can see where this is going.
They get up there pretty close, put the whammy on any of your aura abilities that you need to, like, any kind of enhancing save, give somebody an OPSEC or feel no pain or something. Get out of here.
Really good, dude. Yeah. Turn off other people's, feel no pain auras and just kill them extra easy.
Yeah, and we're talking about the bikers. I think the bikers, they come in the starter set, so people are going to have them. But people are going to want them too. There's another stratagem here called the Mag Riders. Use this stratagem in your opponent's shooting phase when a Votan biker unit from your army selects as a target of a ranged attack. Until the end of the phase, subtract 1 from the attack's hit roll. If that unit has advanced its previous turn, that attack hit rolls cannot be rerolled. So can't reroll hits, -1, can't reroll wounds, and I shut off one of your auras.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you invested 3 CP in that. That's a ton. But if you've got moved up to 6, you know, 6 models, why not invest some CP into them?
I think the bikes are one of the better units as well. In a book of really good units, I think the bikes are very good.
Yeah. They can also heroically intervene if necessary.
No, I'll probably not do that often. There are only three attacks with, like, no melee weapon.
No, there is a rule, though, that the familial loyalty, which allows a Votann infantry or Votann biker unit to heroically intervene as if they were a character. Doesn't give you that extra range. This is not one of those that gives a 6-inch. So, I mean, that's... I mean, I don't scratch the surface. We talked about a lot of units, a lot of cool stuff. We have not talked about what you can do with everything, but this is a really nice book.
Yeah, it's a very nice book. They've done a lot with very few data sheets. I've heard a lot of this book is too good. This book is too slow. Why are they so tough? Why are they so extra XYZ? I'm just going to wait and see.
Yeah. Well, what's going to happen over the next few days or the few weeks? Some of the best players out there are going to jump on the Codex and I don't want to say take advantage, but they're going to kind of live in the newness.
Yeah.
Of that other players are not going to expect what's coming. That's one of the reasons we talk about it like this, so we can kind of prep people for what's coming out there.
Get the info out there, yeah.
And there are things like this will have an impact on the meta of what you're seeing at your local game store or at tournaments if you go to tournaments. So there's going to have to be an adjustment. So Red, when there's like an information or knowledge gap, is there a formal term for that? Because we're going to be living in that for the next couple of weeks with this book.
Right, right. And so like, I mean... gaps are definitely it. And what we really go with is that in terms of not having facts, right, we call what leading up to that, what we need to verify, we call them assumptions, right? I mean, that's legitimately how we look at it in a system as we're trying
to identify. We're talking about the players that are going to be on the other side of this, not knowing what to expect, not adapting their armies yet to what this codex is bringing.
Right. And so as that player, you walk into it and you're looking across the table with the love, right? And you have to make assumptions. You are assuming that it plays like your army, that it plays like Space Marines, that it plays like you can't confirm it until it starts to play out. And so that's one of the things as we go into and where we're anticipating an enemy situation, we make a lot of assumptions on how they operate based off of what we do know. Clearly, if you're a new player or you're a player going into playing up against the love and you haven't had an opportunity to really look at or review it, I think even if you were to just read it, it's still not the same as experiencing it, right? It's still not the same as actually having to react to everything that they're going to bring to bear. And I would say to what you started saying, Paul, that those players against the love are going to have to really work through it. Only through that experience will they really figure out all those combos that are going to be inflicted against them. And so in the meantime, you're just stuck. Okay, I know this rule happens. I know this happens. I know there's these whole litany of stratagems. But I would argue this is what new players go through in all cases. I think that it's many of the seasoned players, the ones that have been playing and already played through many other factions. Yes, they're going to have the learning curve specifically for Votann. But everybody has gone through this at some point. And so a little bit of discovery learning never killed anybody in a war game. And so I think it'll be a really great time. Again, the awesomeness that comes with the rapid updates, and you know, rapid updates is a matter of perspective for some of us who are used to, you know, Codex updates every 3 to 5 years or so, bringing out an entire new army with everything they have and the seasonal changes and objectives and everything. I think it's going to be pretty interesting. I think that the assumptions will just be a matter of time, and then folks will be familiar with it soon enough.
There is a stratagem for the beam weapons as well. The core buster fire pattern uses stratagem in your shooting phase after an enemy unit is hit by an attack made by a beam weapon fired by a Votann Mull in your army until the end of the phase. Each time the enemy unit is hit by another attack made by a beam weapon fired by a Votann model, roll d6. On a 4+, the enemy suffers 1 mortal wound in addition to the normal damage. You cannot only suffer a maximum of 6 mortal wounds per phase due to this stratagem.
Oh, so that's how you try and kill things like incidentally with your beams. Like you're shooting your beams at their, you know, land rate or whatever, and you're drawing the lines over the units in between, and you're trying to mortal wound them out without having to actually shoot guns at them. That could be pretty. That's a pretty clever way. I keep looking at the beams and just thinking, like, this is how Votann players are really going to express themselves. How well they execute their beam plays. Similar to GSC with Crossfire. Like, how well you pull off your Crossfire and you're exposed and all those things really determines whether or not you have a good shooting phase or not. So yeah, I think this is going to be similar.
Yeah,
or you just skew all that and go Magna Rail Kill.
Well, you stack it up, right? You got to stack up some things. Got to spend some resources. You got to make sure you're in range of stuff. And yeah, so I guess we're going to be talking about Votann for a couple of weeks. There's a ton of cool stuff in here. We've, you know, kind of barely scratched the surface on the units and have, you know, not really given any complete army list advice just about what weapons and profiles are standing out to us. I did have the opportunity to put together and paint the champion model, and I went with yellow, and I went with almost like an Imperial Fist color scheme. And yellow, I wanted it to stand out and be bright, you know, just going to look good with the decals, put a stripe on them or whatever. But with the contrast paints now as the base coat for the yellow, it made it pretty effortless. Yeah,
which yellow was it? Which one was it?
The Ionian yellow.
Okay. So one of the classic contrast, not one of the newer ones, right?
Yeah, that's because it's got kind of like a deep orangey, like it looks really good in the recesses.
Yeah.
And then Uriel yellow as the top coat. And I highlighted with Eustabdi Bone,
nice.
Like edge highlight, just a little bit. And then, of course, went with red for the axe.
Did you just use Wraithbone or Wraithseer, whatever it is?
I did, yeah, yeah.
For the under?
Yeah. So this is very important because I used the old Korax white as my prime originally. And I looked at it, I'm like, that is not smooth enough. The new Korax white, very smooth, but I had an old can. I'm like, let me just get by. Let me just use this old can. And I saw it on there. I'm like, that is not going to be what I want. Because,
well, that was, you know, I back in the day, I never bought white spray because it was really inconsistent. And I think they've really figured it out in the last kind of, I want to say 5 years, but I couldn't really tell you for sure. They really figured out their white rattle cans and have come a long way.
Yeah. It's super smooth now. And, but the Wraith Seer also incredibly smooth. And so I did a real light prime back over that. Like, okay, I'm back on track. And with the contrast method like this, the tools to paint these brighter pastel colors is better than it's ever been. And yeah, you can do it. And so I'll post some pictures up. And then I went with the Astro Granite as the base. I actually went to the website today, the GW website, to buy more Astro Granite. And I bought a bunch of other paint and forgot to get the Astro Granite. So I got to get some more, which is fine. You know, whatever, get distracted. There's lots of cool things on the site. I got distracted. But I went with a gray base, because they come, some of them come on the rocks, so like they're on an asteroid. So I thought that might look, you know, the gray look cool with the yellow armor, and it wasn't that difficult to do. We all know when we all hear that yellow is intimidating, but those products made it a lot easier. So that's my hobby tip. It's possible.
I'm happy that there's generations of hobbyists now who do not know, like walking into a freaking Games Workshop in my early teens and being told to not play Imperial Fists because no one was confident that my 14-year-old self could paint yellow.
Yeah. But this is, again, with the way the contrast works, it gives you a nice thing to work up from. And what I found after the contrast was on and then going with the yellow, it was no different than painting any other Space Marine armor type. And so if you've painted a Space Marine army as you're familiar with the base coat and then going that, even if it's just one level of color up, brighter up, then the yellow is possible now. There you go. Skill unlocked. Go for it. There will be, by the time you hear this, there will be some pictures up on Twitter. Happy to share. And if anybody has any questions about it, yeah, happy to entertain those as well. That's our show this week, folks.
Fun show. We're closing in on the last couple of dexes of this edition. Please, please, please. God? Where? God? Hey? God? Maybe?
Oh, man. Don't get please? Me excited yet.
Oh, World Eaters too, Red.
Know, man. I can't wait. It's going to be, I mean, we've got so many good things ahead of us, you know, in the recent piece. I know, you know, I'm sorry I missed the last couple episodes, busy dealing with some other stuff, but, you know, I didn't get a chance to gush about some of the things that came out of Nova and what we saw preview wise for World Eaters and whatnot. Even for the fins, I'll take some of those new helmet designs. I really like the shoulders and everything. I'm pretty excited for the developments.
And was that a certain arm for a unit we thought was dead?
Which one are you talking about?
There are some really big Terminator-sized arms there that people think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, man. A lot to be excited for. Really excited for. So it's going to be good.
Hang tight. It's going to be a cool thing. And next week we'll be talking a little bit more about leagues. Want to hear everyone's impression of the leagues out there. If they're excited about building them, getting them on the table, apprehensive about playing against them. You know, we want to hear all that stuff. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!